presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, and I didn't expect necessarily to go as long as we did with Sean, but I felt like I had to, have to talk him off the ledge. it's got to be, it's got to be hard when you look forward, to certain, certain part of your year. I was feeling that same way. Right mid-March, I mean, when it became apparent that there wasn't going to be the usual, the tour de Derby from New Orleans to Hot Springs to Arcadia, back to Hot Springs, but to Louisville and Baltimore, that usually March, April, May, those 75 days or so, I typically am out and about, all but 2 5-day periods. And when it became, clear that Tina kept saying, you're going to have to cancel those plans. You're going to have to cancel those trips and those flights, hotel res, all that stuff. And I didn't want to believe it until it became, very, very obvious. Dick Powell stepping in, and Dick, sorry for the delay, but got to get in and wrap up the Hong Kong season, as well as look forward to the King George on Saturday, where Nabil is going to have to fight off Bally Doyle, and we got other topics, obviously, Saratoga and Presque Isle. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Hanging out here at home. Surprised they're on the turf today, because that was a lot of rain last night. I got caught in it. I was at a Babe Ruth game down in Clifton Park, and luckily the game wasn't played, but still, we got there and started getting worse and worse, and all the way home. It was just, wow. So I was a little surprised to see the text about staying on the turf today, which is fine. They've already run 25 turf races versus 26 dirt races. So the fear of tearing up the Belmont turf course, how about tearing up the Saratoga turf course? Because it's only, we got 35 days left, and that's a lot of turf racing, and today's racing is not going to do any good for it. So,
well, it's hard.
I was kind of a surprise this morning.
I can tell you that, even here, where, Tina and I have tried to keep up, put a lot into this, our grass. I never had a decent lawn, really, until Tina came into my life. And like Sean Clancy, came into my life off the racetrack. And I got an off-the-track thoroughbred, actually. I never thought of it that way. even with the rain, the turf has been, increasingly rock hard. I mean, we've been desperate for, so I don't, maybe the little bit, but I don't think they're going to be sinking in by any stretch. It's been so hard.
No, it's just 25 turf races and 5 days of racing is just has its wear and tear factor, but I don't mind the rain. I think turf courses are safer when there's some give in them than when
Absolutely.
They get rock hard.
Absolutely.
No problem with that. Just managing it to get through your meet. And so we did that. Hong Kong finished up as we expected. Tony Cruz did close the gap with the trainers, but he only had 4 starters the last night at Happy Valley. He won with 2 of them, so he finished with 65 behind the Ricky Yu, 67. Zach won the riding title. Business was, I think it was an all-time record for Happy Valley that last Wednesday night. I mean, the last two nights of racing at Sha Tin and at Happy Valley, the all sources handle was just enormous, and they've already raised purses for next year, and that, you know, that's raising it for 88 meetings, so it's the whole year. The purses have been raised, stake races have been raised. So business wise, they had a terrific season on track. They had a terrific season. They still have challenges with the area, but they've been well managed, and considering what they're up against, that they that had to be about the best year ever. So they were able to get through it. And one thing you notice in Asian countries, and because they've had SARS and they've had things that we've never had, there's a high level of compliance with wearing masks and washing hands and things like that. That they really take it seriously. And so despite Hong Kong's density, which is more dense than New York City, they've been able to do very, very well, and the track has been able to do very well with all the issues they've been challenged on. So it was great racing the whole meet. The one day they got 19 inches of rain fast and firm 3 days later. I mean, that's just amazing. The investment they've made in their facilities. Now, one thing with Hong Kong, and I could argue this all day, that if you take the two biggest racing jurisdictions in terms of handle, they both have high takeout. So the thing about got a lower takeout, get high handle. But if you have high takeout, is it going back into the game? And in Hong Kong, in Japan's case, yes, it is. So the facilities are great. The way it's done is great. The information is great. So all those things are there. And more importantly, the field sizes are awesome. In Hong Kong, wound up 12.9. And that would be higher if Happy Valley could handle more than 12. I mean, every night Happy Valley's full gate of 12. Sha Tin can handle 14. So it averages out to about 12.9. But they have the field sizes, and they will continue to be strong. And they're already shipping in new horses. David Hayes is coming in to take John Size's place. And, you know, there's lots of people in Hong Kong looking to buy horses all over the world. And they will be acclimated over the summer, and they'll start their racing, and they'll provide, you know, full stalls in the barns. And then once you get a stall, you're kind of expected to run. So they race pretty frequently because they have the infrastructure, the swimming, and all the exercise programs for the horses, not just galloping on tracks and stuff. So it works. Let's put it that way.
Well, we'll look forward to the start of the 2021 season, and appreciate HKJC, and we're going to have some new wrinkles for the new season. So thanks for that, Dick. Let's fold in a few topics at large. And what do you make of these declarations that's going to pit Enable against three O'Brien? I don't know. This is like a cage match. Three Coolmores versus the Judmont mistress.
Yeah, there was a race during See the Stars' three-year-old season when it was very similar. It was, I think, it was four horses. It was him against the O'Brien horses. I don't know if it was at York or Goodwood. It was a mile and a quarter race, and obviously the O'Brien horses were using team tactics. One of them went to the front. Two of them kind of raced next to each other. McKinnane sat behind them on See the Stars. Well, then when they got in the stretch, Master Craftsman, and I think it was Fame and Glory, went up to take the lead, and they split the rabbit. So now here comes Mick Kinane, and he goes right in between them. I mean, it's a four-horse field that had this fascinating stretch run, because here's Mick, you know, splitting horses in a four-horse field. Usually you don't do that. You go around them. You got the best horse. Why take that chance? He just went right in between them, one for fun. And I don't know if we'll see that again Saturday, but you got Ryan Moore, you got Ocean Murphy, you got William Buick. So O'Brien's not, he has his three best writers that are available. Frankie's writing for John Gosden. Japan is a, you know, he's a nice horse. He's coming off a third to Guyette and Sandown, and no one was beating Guyette that day. So that's not a disgrace. He did win at York last year. He did win the Prix de Jockey Club. He won the French Derby at Longchamp, going a mile and a half last year. Won at Ascot, was third at Epsom, so he has his own credentials. Anthony Van Dyke won the Epsom Derby. Last year was second in the Irish Derby. Kind of in and out since then, but he ran a pretty good third against Bricks and Mortar in our race, only beating the length and a quarter in that one. And then last time out in the Ascot race, he didn't run particularly well, but he had obviously back class. Sovereign is another O'Brien horse who won at Galway. He was, he was third in a Group 3 in his debut. And then he won the Irish Derby last year over Anthony Van Dyke and then Enable. Had been on that tremendous win streak, went in two Auks in a row, tried for a third, Waldgeist ran her down in the stretch. She's been back. She was second in the Sandown Eclipse to Guyette, and once again, no one was beating her. Gosden had said she was about 80-85% fit for that race, and he wasn't making excuses. He said it before the race, and she ran like a horse who wasn't 100% fit. Frankie rode her like a horse that wasn't 100% fit. He didn't gut her. He knew he couldn't win that day. This is more of a goal than that race was. And I think at a mile and a half on a track that she absolutely loves, she will be super tough. What's going to be fascinating with the race, Steve, is the jockey tactics. Usually one of these O'Brien horses will go to the front. Now, do you go out and get Ocean Murphy or William Buick to ride and say, hey, you're the sacrificial lamb today? I mean, I don't know. And so I'm sure Frankie will stalk them. And you got that nice stretch at Ascot when they come up the hill and finish up. And I look for him to get to the outside and see if he can run them down. But she's doing well. She's 6 years old, which sounds like a lot, but on turf you can get away with that. And she just goes for a third King George and Queen Elizabeth, and I think she can do it. I don't think this is the greatest group of Aidan O'Brien horses. They all on their day have been very, very good. So if they all show up with their A game, one of them could be tough. But I think Enable's A minus game is better than their A game.
Well, all eyes on Enable as she, you know, continues her somewhat surprising career continuation. So it's just nice to anticipate having her. Dick, we've been anticipating, and before we talk about Saratoga, let's get the next topic in, and want to mention that Presque Isle is ready Monday, finally. And you know, you and I, the last several years, have previewed cards at Presque. They got a start time of 4:45. That's notable. They're going to start out on Monday with 8. Of course, Colonial starts on Monday as well. And today, don't forget, opening day at Arlington, as we discussed with Marcus Hirsch. But it's just nice that after, you know, a kind of a surprising continuing difficulties to get, you know, to get the backstretch opened at Presque and then, you know, get, you know, a start date going. It seemed strange just because, I mean, Philadelphia was hit harder by COVID than Erie, and yet Erie ends up being the last of the three Pennsylvania thoroughbred venues to get started.
Right, but you got to remember, Parks and Penn National were already racing. Where
that's true. That's true.
Prescott shuts down in October, and to get started with all the restrictions and travel and, you know, where are your jocks coming from and things like that, that made this a bigger challenge than you would think. Now, they drew well. They drew 76 horses for the 8 races Monday night, which was very, very good news. All the familiar names are there. I don't see Gallardo riding. I don't know if that's going to be a trend or what, but Pablo Morales is back. He was always up there last year. Jerry Brooks, leading trainer. Teresa Connolly, second leading trainer. They all have horses in. Mario Pino's back to ride. All the familiar names and faces are there, and actually pretty good-sized fields for Monday night. The purses look comparable. There's a state-bred maiden going for $30,000, which is about par. So they just got to get going and start generating revenue. I'm not sure the status of the slot casino there, whether they have any ability to open on a limited basis to start driving some revenue. But this was kind of surprising for me that they did pretty well with this opening day card. If this is any indication, they're going to have more horses per race than they did last year.
Unbelievable. And you mentioned Gallardo. You know, I saw him down at Monmouth, and just checking, he's got a full complement of mounts, so he's going to ride at Monmouth this summer.
He's done that before, but just the way it works out, he could normally ride the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and even sometimes Thursday at that park. So
I think this summer those days are over. There's not going to be a lot of commuting.
Yes. That's probably the reason.
So nice. And just looking here, we'll see more. I haven't looked at their condition book, but you've got waiver claimer getting started, and then maiden claimer, straight claiming, Pennsylvania bred, maiden special weight, $30,000, another maiden special weight, $30,000. You got boys and then girls. Then you've got a nice allowance, nine horses. Eight with an entry, 8, 12, 9, 9. You've got non-winners, a 2 claimer with 11 and an entry, actually, so 10 betting interests. And then the nightcap, a waiver claimer, too. So great that Presque Isle, and with Presque Isle's opening, I mean, Colonial was scheduled, but with Presque Isle and Arlington starting today, every track, and of course Finger Lakes completing their first week as well, and we've got every venue that intended to run will be up and running, including Saratoga. Dick, and how about some early thoughts? We had a little preview last week as part of the HKJC send-off, some thoughts about these first 6 days.
Well, I was really happy opening day that there was two disqualifications. That was good to see. I was hoping it might be a message from the stewards that we're going to call things tight. We're going to stop the weaving in and out. And in fact, last night, I watched the Saudi Cup again. And it was interesting because the minute the race is over and Louis is bringing maximum security back, and they finally get a microphone to Jason Service, and he says, "I can't believe what Irad did there. He was in and out. He should be in the film room. That was really dangerous." And well, we see it every day. So at least we see two DQs to get the meet started, but we get to Sunday's Lake Placid, and here's Irad dropping in on Joel, almost putting him through the hedge going into the first turn. Joel won the race. So, unfortunately, in many people's eyes, no harm, no foul. I don't know how Ira cannot be suspended for his ride in Sunday's Lake Placid Stakes. I just cannot see it. So, whether you're going to use Category 1, Category 5, F4, you know, I don't care what category you're using. That was dangerous and reckless. And I checked websites. I can't find anything that an announcement had been made, but so I was hoping. I had kind of like a hope against hope. Maybe we're going to have a cleaner meet and a safer meet without these shenanigans on the track, and not based on Sunday's evidence. We started out good, but I don't know. So that's I mean, when you watch races as much as we do, that's always a big topic. It never, you know, it just never seems to end. So, and it wasn't like they're going for the same hole. Irad looked over at him 2-3 times and still came over on him. It's like you don't have, you're in the 6 hole. You don't have an inherent right to get to the hedge. Joel's on the rail. He already has the hedge. And just he kept looking at him. Then Joel's horse throws his head up and gets stopped and everything else. He was obviously tons the best to overcome that. But just for the sake of safety, you know, there's safety and then there's safety. Well, if you're allowing stuff like that, I don't want to hear about safety.
Did you happen to
soapbox rant?
No, I appreciate it, and we're going to bring it up with Tony Black in a little bit as well. And did you happen to see what's today? Thursday, so it would have been when did I have Tuesday? The DQ in the first at Lone Star on Tuesday.
No. No, I didn't say that.
After we finish, or at some point today, you know, when you get a moment, pull it up, because there is absolutely a perfect and subtle herding incident where the horse that is second across the wire is just... It is trying to go by, and the leader is just... incrementally, you know, got his shoulder and his neck, and he's keeping the horse at bay by driving him about a path and a half. I mean, it isn't one of these glaring veering incidents. It's way subtle, and I think there was plenty. I didn't see it. I had to kind of go back and look and see what some people who, you know, who are, you know, regularly aghast at the lack of action on this topic, to see how much they, you know, actually saw it live or even went back and looked at it. And it was really gratifying to, and yes, I did have a bet involved, would have cashed something either way, but it was a big priced horse that ends up, you know, being elevated and deserved to be elevated, because that is exactly what the herding discussion is about. It is, you know, people say, oh, there's no contact. There doesn't have to be any contact. This notion that you've got to T-bar a horse to get taken down is just ridiculous. I mean, who hasn't driven a car and you're driving along in your lane and, you know, some mama Luke is on their phone, fiddling with the radio, and they're suddenly drifting, you know, they're sort of abreast of you. And so you drift with them a couple of, you know, for a little bit, and then finally you honk. But I mean, if you were trying to go by, you couldn't because they're in your way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
They're taking away your path. If they're,
exactly.
If they're a length and a half ahead, they're allowed to go wherever they want.
Yeah, exactly.
But not when
yeah.
a horse is lapped on, and we see it nauseatingly frequently. I've talked about when I spoke to Stewart School 2 years ago, and I wish that had been filmed. I mean, the number one, you want to talk about cojones. For me to do what I did.
Listen to you.
You gotta be nuts to get up there and say what I said. It's like going up before baseball umpires and, you know, you guys stink. And I didn't say that, but I kept focusing on perception. And one of the examples I gave was the Florida Derby when Materiality won. Rick Vilas' horse got fouled in the stretch. I'm not saying it was enough to take down, but they gallop out. Jose was trying to get the outrider to call in something. They didn't. Something failed. Whatever. Race is official. Have a nice day. It's 7 o'clock. We can't run after sundown, which was 7 o'clock. Good night, everybody. So the steward of that, it turns out he was one of the Florida stewards. I didn't realize that. And he says to me, "Well, are you saying that we made the race official so that we could get out of there?" And I said, "No, but that's how it looked. And said, well, did they show the replay? I said, no, they did not. They had a big trophy ceremony after the race. By then, at 7:15, they never showed the replay. I've never seen the head-on of the incident. I said, that's what drives horse players crazy. The perception is so bad that even if you did the right thing, the perception is horrible. And they're kind of like, you know, okay, well, maybe this guy will shut up. Maybe the clock will stick. He'll go home. But it was stuff they needed to hear. Now, what effect? I did get to meet Don Brumfield, who at one point, I think if Don was packing heat, he would have used it on me. But I wound up sitting down and having a sandwich with him, and he was great. But it was just they're not used to hearing the stuff that I told them. And I had examples. And I gave them examples. I said, I'll name names. The three worst are Irad Ortiz, Jose Ortiz, and Javier Castellano. They are the three worst at doing it. Well, there's a fine line. I said, yes, but the fine line used to be here, and now the fine line is way out here.
Right.
Because if you didn't enforce it, that fine line is just going to keep going and going and going. So that describes perfectly what you just said with the Lone Star race. Except they did the right thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, back to the racing and some of the results. How you hitting them?
You know, hitting them very good. I do a lot of listening on gambling podcasts and theory and all sorts of stuff, Kelly Criterion and everything else. So I finally decided I'm betting way too much money. Hmm. You know, I'm looking for a score, and so I scaled down my bets to a correct percentage of my, quote, bankroll and stuff like that, and I've been doing well. Now, naturally, being a bettor, I take that as a loss that if I'd have been betting stupidly as I had been betting, I would have made a lot more money. Because instead of winning X, I would have been winning 3X. But no, the betting has been fine. I do a play today every morning at 7:25 on WROW. That's been good. I've been enjoying the races. I'm home, obviously, and I don't have much interest in going to some viewing party or anything like that, especially if you get there and they have, if they don't have the race on high-def TV, I'm turning around and leaving. You know, I'm not watching racing on anything less than high-def. So, best place is living room downs. Sit back, relax, watch the races, go in and out of the house. Tape them, stop the TiVo, pick up the TiVo, you know, do all that. And I'm keeping track of lots of things with my spreadsheets and things, you know. So obviously, Christoph Clement, man, if you're a Clement fan, he's been smoking hot, and Rosario riding very well, and Jose riding very well, and it's going to be interesting with the jocks, because the jocks ain't going anywhere, and they're going to be here every day, and it makes it really tough on that second five out of the top 10. I've always said, take the top 10, turn it upside down. Those are the five guys you want to bet, 6 through 10, not 1 through 5. 1 through 5, it's hard to get a price on. But now with these jocks needing business, because those 6 through 10 guys aren't making, you know, like Arlington Million Day, they'd always have the track to themselves and get a lot of business at Saratoga. Well, that's going to happen a lot less this year. Maybe the end of the meet it will with Churchill. So it's going to be interesting to follow. I see a lot of the big riders riding a lot of horses, and they're in almost every race. And field size is 7.4, so there's not a lot of extra rides out there for the other guys.
No. Anything, you got a play or two you want to, you got any idea that you want to distribute?
My play today, just like, it's race 5, it's the Mike Maker horse, but I'll be darned if I can find my past performances.
New Frontier.
Yes. And it's kind of an odd play because there's eight horses. There's a ton of speed in the race. I'm expecting the track to still be somewhat wet and maybe speed favoring. He doesn't have to be on the lead. I love being by Spikestown. You can't get any better. He has really good experience on sloppy, muddy, stuff like that. I could foresee a trip behind the speed, like not way behind, but, you know, the six is probably going to go. The two is probably going to go. Some of these first-time starters are bred to go. And, you know, I could see Tyler getting a decent trip, third, fourth, hopefully swing out, have some run in the lane. I know he's 0-13. He's kind of a hanger, with however you want to describe him. But since he added blinkers, he's been pretty good throughout the turf race last time out. I think at a halfway decent price, I think he fits.
Nice.
The other races, I didn't spend a lot of work on, not knowing what the what conditions were going to be today.
Well, right now, we're knock on wood, we're in business. And yesterday, yeah, too, we managed to slip right through, and despite all the threats and the, you know, the pending potential for rain, didn't come, you know, in serious quantity until after racing was over. So we continue to do okay when it comes to the.
I can play some pick five beginning in race two. And maybe go single in race five, you know. Try to pare my ticket down to a manageable number.
Dick, speaking of, we're thinking we're focused on the turf, but what's your early read on the new main track, on the reconditioned and the, you know, the drainage aided surface?
Well, I think what they did on the drainage was great, because that was always an issue. They always had those gaps every so many feet or yards where they had to, like, have someone out there with a shovel and digging it out so that the water would drain off. So it's not draining off uniformly, and you get pockets where it's drained, other places it's not, and that's never good for footing and consistent footing. So I think what they did made just an awful lot of sense, and they put that safety rail in, and there's like a stone base that they did in the off season that I saw pictures of, like in May, that's underneath the cushion. It's kind of an odd looking track in terms of the color, because Glenn's been adding this orange clay to it over the years. So it's not the old Saratoga dark loam, you know, good and lead your home. That's very different. So far it's played fair. No, I don't like fair. I like biases. I like to cut corners.
Sure.
But yeah, it'll have its challenges with the. Not just weather, but then when we don't get weather and it gets the, you know, the hot and dry, and they can't get enough water down on it. But it knock on wood, so far so good.
Keeping an eye on it, and it's been, you know, it's been a little tough to close. We'll see. Another few days, get through this first full week, and start to wade in. I've actually been very cautious. I have not. You know, jumped in feet first. I looked at Sunday's card, and I'll start to, you know, get geared up for the weekend. But I'm not exactly sending it in myself. I haven't, and I have only written up one card, Sunday's card. I know. I apologize to people that, you know, are have written and wondering, you know, but I just this first weekend with the trip down to Monmouth and so forth, it just wasn't practical. So it's a long meet. It's, you know, we got 7 weeks, so plenty of time to take our shots. Dick, I appreciate it. This was great, and we'll catch up next week.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Dick Powell, everybody. We'll stay right here, and Steve Haskin is going to join us next. I got to tell you about, you know, you saw the, probably some of you anyway, yesterday, the news, Larry Jones, some fall. He was working a two-year-old, and, you know, he's 63 now. unraced two-year-old Saturday at Ellis. And Larry said, after a broken collarbone, he's got a fractured vertebrae and 9 broken ribs. So Larry's work days, days of getting on horses in the morning, that they're over. That'll be the last one I ride, he said. I've gone out in style. So best wishes to Larry for a speedy recovery. He's back up and around, but he's got to be moving pretty gingerly, big time. So what was it? Let me see. 2014, you'll recall, he had a bad spill at Delaware. You remember that one? Yeah. But then he came back, and he said, no, I'll get back on. And it's just unbelievable. I understand, too, that he, you know, the horse may have landed on him, more than just, than being thrown. So we'll reach out to Larry. And of course, for a long time, we had, it was a source of amusement to some degree. I mean, especially if Larry would get on a smaller, a horse with a little, more of a petite frame. And Larry with that straight-legged style on either side. And it would seem like visually that his feet were dragging. as he rode, he'd have that stiff, that stiff style upright in the irons. Well, we're sorry that Larry, dealt with this, but you know what? 63, that's enough already. Steve Haskin is prepared. Steve, I wanted to give everybody the news, about Larry Jones, banged up pretty good.
Well, I'll tell you, in the long run, it's probably the best for him at his age, and it's not only best for him; it's probably best for the horses too, who have to carry him around the track every morning.
But that's the lap, right?
I mean, I don't wish anybody, what he suffered. It's amazing. First of all, at his age, I mean, 9 broken ribs and the back,
yeah,
and a vertebrae, and I mean, the guy must be made of iron, I'll tell you. I mean, if that happened to me, I'd still be laying on the racetrack a week later. But listen, you hate to see anything happen like that, but it sounds like a horrible accident, but I think it's about time for him to hang up the spurs.
Exactly. Well,
I remember. I'll never forget, by the way, I'm going to go all the way back to 2007 during the Triple Crown. And I remember at the Belmont Stakes watching him get up on Hardspun. And I have to say, I actually felt sorry for Hardspun. He made Hardspun look like a Shetland pony when he got up on him.
Yeah.
And then he's going around there like a 2-minute lick. And I'm saying, oh, my God. I think I had written, he once kidded around with me. I think I wrote about him because I was doing, Belmont doings and Preakness doings and reporting every day. And I said at the time, I said, Houtspun, is going around with a 2-minute lick, with his, and I think I might have said 180, 190 pound trainer on there. And Larry kiddingly took issue and said that he was only 170.
I remember that. That's right.
But he was, that was a big guy, and he's just up, standing up on the horses like that. And God bless him. I mean, he did it for a lot of years, and he was up on a lot of good horses who all withstood, the weight on their back. But he knew how to do it. He was a great horseman. Listen, I remember meeting Larry Jones at the Breeders' Cup at Arlington. Was it Arlington or was Lone Star? Maybe it was Lone Star. I think it was Lone Star, where nobody knew who he was. I mean, he had just come in. He was running some horse in the Breeders' Cup, but nobody had really ever heard of him. And he just burst on the scene like that. And, you know, he's gone through, you know, ups and downs, you know, a lot of it unjustified. You know, when you think of all the heat he took from Eight Bells, which was criminal. But, you know, I mean, they practically ran him out of the game. I ran into him at Parks one day, and he was really emotional, saying, I don't know what to do, because he was getting vilified all over the place. And, you know, he took it really hard. And he at that point, he was considering leaving, just giving up training. I think he actually did for a little while.
He did. He absolutely did.
Yeah. He gave up training for a while and then came back. But, boy, I mean, what he's done, you know, with his work, especially the fillies. I mean, he's had so many good fillies. So, you know, it's time for him to start training. What is in his... What is he now? 64, was it?
63, yeah, that's us.
63. Yeah, it's time. It's time. You know, at his size and, you know, his weight... Well, I guess size and weight is about the same thing. But he's also a tall guy. I mean, he's over 6 feet. So, yeah, I mean, I wish him a speedy recovery, and I wish him... a lot of good years training and not have to worry about getting on these horses' back and finding himself a really good exercise rider. It'll be tough in a while. You know, he's so used to doing it his whole life.
Right. That's true. You remember, you know, you talk about his height and his weight. You remember that whole thing when you referenced that he and Cindy were calibrating Larry's weight to the exercise and to the specific horses, and this whole it always felt like that was, you know, sort of a tongue in cheek thing that we absolutely know that, you know, what Larry's weight and
well, the thing is, you got to admit, by the way, that nobody comes up with better one liners than him. First of all, I remember one time when he had, I think it was Freezing Fire in the Derby. And he was on the far end of one of the Derby barns. I think it was barn 41, the second Derby barn. And he had it in, and the office on the right, he brought with him, who was in there every day, was his African gray parrot.
Yeah, the parrot.
And he was yapping. You go in the barn, and this parrot is yapping away and making all kinds of noises and talking. And, you know, I mean, only Larry would bring a parrot with him. You know, to the Derby and be in the barn every day. You know, and one of my favorite lines when he ran Hardspun, and he was like one of the first trainers, because he was training over the synthetic surface at Keeneland that year. Well, that was the year everybody wound up going to Keeneland to train. Well, Pletch had five horses in the Derby, and four of them were at Keeneland, and Doug O'Neill had three horses at Keeneland, and Larry was at Keeneland. The only trainer who was at Churchill Downs was Carl Hanford, Carl Nafsker with Street Sense. So anyway, Larry had worked Hardspun like a mile, and the horse came back like, you know, breathing hard. He was like completely wiped out, and all the trainers told him, they said, you can't work a horse a mile over this poly track. It takes too much out of them. So anyway, he winds up working him five furlongs in 57, and I think it was like 57-3 or 57-4, and everybody was like criticizing him. They said, this cowboy, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And he was even referencing himself to it. He called himself a dumb old cowboy for working a horse that fast. And then when Hardspun runs second to Street Sense in the Derby after the race, the first thing Larry told me when I got back, he says, you know, he says he might have won it. He said, as it turns out, I might have worked him too slow. He just had a unique way of looking at things. I mean, I don't want to talk about him like he's gone, but he's a funny guy. He's always got great lines. But like I said, I wish him well.
Yeah, we'll check in with Larry and see how he's making out. And, Steve, let's talk about the three-year-old scene. And was down at Monmouth. I had really, Tina and I had a really nice couple of days, like a mini vacation. Got some short time in, really nice. And,
where,
you know,
you
stayed at Al Gold's in Red Bank.
Oh, okay. You're America's guest.
Yes. And,
just like George Washington, every racetrack you go to, there's going to be a sign in front of somebody's house saying, Steve Bick slept here.
Well, I think actually, Tina and I, we were there what? We were there Friday? No, Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night. So we now have actually stayed in the condo more than Al and Hillary Gold, because it's brand new, and I think they've only been there one night or two nights, because they're up at the house at Saratoga. But they just they sold their house in Ocean that the kids grew up in, and their daughter Dana, she's got a condo couple of doors down from them, so if they want to come to the shore. But Al said, you know, that's your Haskell house. So
hey, it's good to have, you know, you go down every year, you don't have to worry about where to stay.
Exactly. So we had a wonderful time, and it was nice to have 3,500.
But watch Bob Baffert win another Haskell.
Exactly. Some thoughts about what we saw, and you know, we've been having every day a referendum. Rich Migliori, Andy, Jay Privman. Now it's your turn, and Baffert weighed in himself too about whether this horse doesn't want to go past 9 furlongs, maybe didn't even want to go 9 furlongs, or whether, as Bob says, he'll be fine.
Well, I agree he'll be fine. Whether he can go a mile and a quarter is a different story. You know, he certainly doesn't. He doesn't run like he's not bred to go a mile and a quarter. Number one, he's a horse that has won obviously all of his races, but one, the only race he didn't win was when he did not have his own way. When he got compromised a bit, you know, with the outside post, and he couldn't get the lead, and you know he ran okay, but I mean, Honor AP just blew by him. You know, he didn't even put up a fight. So, you know, all of his races, he's had his own way. He's still immature. You know, we saw what he was capable of in that in that second race when he kept ducking into the rail. And listen, you could say he was unfocused in this race. And you know, listen, Mike Smith was thrilled. He's waving his arms like they just won the Triple Crown. But you know, if you want to look at the race, fine. You know, he won the Haskell. I guess he got decent. I guess he got decent speed ratings in the race. Although, you know, he came home the last 3/8 and 38 and 4. And we, you know, when you come home, I know Monmouth was not playing particularly fast that day.
No,
but you know, he was on the slower side. But forgetting about the final time, I'm not even going by the final time. But you know, when you come home at almost 39. And you almost blow a 3-length lead in the stretch. You know, I don't know. New York Traffic is a very good horse, very solid horse. It's a horse that anybody would want in the barn, but he doesn't have like a big turn of foot that he's going to turn it on at the end. When you see a horse opening up on another horse, and the other horse is not gaining the whole length of the stretch, and then boom, in the last 1/16 of a mile, the other horse starts closing in on him. Horses don't do that. It's always the horse in front that's coming back. So whether he lost focus, whether he got tired, whatever you want to say, he's not a horse that I would look forward to be betting in the Kentucky Derby. I mean, I've never had him highly ranked. I remember, you know, I've had him ranked as low as like 7th or 6th and somewhere in that area, because I was just waiting for him to show me. I'm waiting for him to show me that he can win under all circumstances, win from off the pace, learn how to rate, mature a little bit, and he's a very talented horse, but he hasn't shown me that he has the ability to rate or overcome adversity, sit off the pace a little bit or so, and close. He hasn't shown all that. So any horse who has to have his own way is a horse you have to be a little bit leery about. And as far as New York Traffic, listen, he's a terrific horse. I mean, I've written him up quite a bit, and he's a good, solid horse. But, you know, I just don't know if he's the kind of horse that's going to win the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, Dr. Post, I guess the race really didn't fit him. I don't think he really was wanted to race at Mile and Eighth at Monmouth at that particular time, but it was a small field, and I thought he'd run better. So I thought he was a little bit disappointing. So if you're asking me if we saw the Derby winner out of that race, a yes or a no, I'd have to say no. What was your take on the race?
When you're watching it live, and you know we were at ground level, so you don't necessarily appreciate how things happened until you watch some replays. And you know, then you fold in, I'm standing there when Mike Smith is coming up with, as Mig called it, he said, I heard a lot of jockey speak from Mike Smith. And, and then Bob with us on Tuesday, I'll give the horse some leeway regarding, the inexperience factor, though he's now had five races.
He's any more inexperienced than anybody.
Exactly.
Except for a few, most of these horses are inexperienced.
Yeah,
he's certainly more experienced than Baffert's other two horses.
Exactly. So you can't really hang your hat on that too much longer. And everybody acknowledges he's had, he can be quirky, and whenever you deal with horses that get to looking around, and if once they feel like they've put away foes, they you got to motivate them. And then there was the earmuffs, and Mike says, I tried to smooch to him, yeah, except that he couldn't hear anything. I don't know. I went into it with, particularly with Jay's interpretation that from way back. I mean, Jay has said from day one that he finds this to be a horse, and you look at him and on paper, it just feels like he's a middle distance type. The difference you bring up, Baffert's other horse, Uncle Chuck. Even though he's not necessarily bred, for classic trips, he moves like a horse that the ground, that he's taken one to everybody else's two. So I don't know. I'm dubious as to, how viable he is with that.
I am too.
Panel.
I've always been doing. I've just been waiting for him to prove himself. But this year's Derby is going to be so difficult to bet, because we have horses coming in here in ways into the Derby in ways that they've never done before. I mean, it's possible we could have a one horse who's a very, very talented horse who's going to try and win the Derby off a four-month layoff.
Yep.
4 months to win the Kentucky Derby in a mile and a quarter. We've got horses coming in off eight-week layoffs. We have horses like Honor AP, he runs in a shared belief, will come in off of 1 mile and a 16th, not a mile and eighth, 1 mile and a 16th race in 11 weeks.
Yep.
We have horses coming in off these long layoffs. We've got two horses, two of Baffert's horses, coming in off of two lifetime starts. Now, here's the way I look at it. As far as the two Baffert horses, I know Baffert won the Derby with Justify, who came into the Derby off only three starts. Of course, obviously, Uncle Chuck is running in the Travers, so he'll have three starts. So he's done it with Justify, but there's a big difference. When Justify ran in the Derby off of three starts, probably more than half that field went into the Derby also lightly raced, because the way the Derby is now, you've got 4 months to go into the Derby. So you're running against young, inexperienced three-year-olds who maybe a lot of them have four starts, some have five, some have six. They're still relatively inexperienced. Now they're going into the Derby. They're still going into the Derby off of three starts, but they're going into the Derby against horses much more experienced, much fitter, much sharper than they would if the Derby was in May. Because now, and much more mature. Now, granted, they're more mature as well, but I think it's going to be harder to beat the horses now, even though the horses now aren't going in with that many starts. I mean, if you look, if now consider the Derby's in September, Tis the Lord's going to go in with only four starts this year in 8 months. Not four starts in 4 months. Four starts in 8 months. And Honor AP is going to go in with three starts in 9 months. So it's going to be so crazy when you look at it. You know, and as far as the horses coming off long layoffs, normally I would say, well, forget about it. No horse is going to win the Derby for 4 months. That would be equivalent, if the Derby was the first Saturday of May, that would be equivalent to winning the Derby in your first start of the year. So you say that's crazy. But you know what? It's not that crazy this year. It's not that crazy. I wouldn't be surprised if some horse did something really weird this year, for the simple reason is that just the opposite of what I just said, is that they're going to go into the Derby with a lot more bottom than they would
right.
if they were going to the right. first Saturday in May. First Saturday in May, if you try to go in off of 6 weeks or 7 weeks, that means you don't have much racing behind you. But if you look at a horse like, you know, like King Guillermo, I mean, he's had a bunch of races. He ran a monster race at Tampa Bay, ran an excellent race at Oaklawn. He's got bottom under him. So
right.
I don't think the rules that apply to the first Saturday in May Derby apply to the first Saturday in September Derby.
Yep.
I think you could. I'm not saying I would like these horses, but it wouldn't shock me as much as a horse coming into the Derby of 6-7 weeks. To 8 weeks, whatever.
Well, like that wasn't
in a May Derby.
What was it, Destin? The Todd 7 weeks or,
well,
or
no,
so.
You see what happened. Yeah, well, you see what happened with Destin is that he had he was the fact is that Destin had run this huge Ragusan number in the Tampa Bay Derby, and he, one of his owners just happened to own the Ragusan sheets.
Right, Steve Marshall.
So there was no way he was going to run them back, because now everything is about sheets and bouncing and all of that. So they had a run Destin in there off of, I think it was 7 weeks or so, 7 or 8 weeks or whatever. And he had no shot, you know, because he didn't have that much bottom to him. He didn't have experience. He didn't have the foundation. So there was no way. So they were, rather than run back again and just tear him apart, the way the sheets people look at it, They had to go into the Derby off that long layoff, and he ran okay, but he was short. There was no way in the world he was ready for a mile and a quarter. And he comes back and he runs a huge race in the Belmont Stakes.
Yep.
So you got to figure if he had a race before the Derby. So it depends on what you look at bouncing. You know, did these horses really bounce? And a lot of people say, you know, Tis the Lord's never really run a fast buyer. So what? Who cares? I don't want them running. Well, I don't want horses running fast buyers and fast. I don't want horses running thoroughbred numbers of -3.5. I want them to run it in the Derby. I don't want them to run it before that. So what I'm saying is that I think we're going to see, we could see something different there. We could see horses coming in there that you would think don't have enough foundation, but they actually do, because they've already put enough of the work in and enough of racing in to overcome that. And they're running against a lot of, you know, lightly raced horses. Sure, you got a horse like Enforceable. He wound up having a break because he had too many starts. He could, you know, he's one of those Enforceable, like we talked about. He's one of those horses that look like, you know, he could be one of those 30-1 in the money horses.
Well, if you want to use something that's come up in the last, you know, 2 weeks as evidence, as supportive documentation on this topic, all those track records and stake records from Keeneland, because those races were run at a time of the year that they've never been run before. And so in terms of the development curve, and also the conditions contribute as well, but that absolutely was a contributing factor at Keeneland. So there's real that's the intrigue that is going to accompany.
There's a lot of intrigue. I mean,
yeah.
Going back to Honor AP, you know, and when he runs in the Shared Relief, what's he going to run against? Four horses tops? I don't know. He's going to run against four horses. So not only does he only have the 1 mile and 1/16 race in 11 weeks. But he has to go from a mile and a 1/16 in a 5-horse field or so. to a mile and a quarter in possibly a 20-horse field. You know, so we're not going to know what to expect from these horses. Plus, for the first time, we're going to have, we're going to have a couple, at least a few horses running in Derby, having already run a mile and a quarter.
Right.
The last time that's happened was Canyonero, and Canyonero had been in Venezuela. And people don't realize, by the way, that Canyonero had won at a mile and a quarter in Venezuela. But his next three starts after that were at 6.5 furlongs. he talked about strange racing and a strange horse. I mean, he had already won a mile and a quarter, and he dropped in three straight 6.5 furlong races. But that's the last horse to go into the Derby, you know, having won at a mile and a quarter. So, you know, Tis the Law is going to try it, and there's going to be several other horses going to try it. And I don't know. A couple of horses that are going to try it are going to have horses coming out of, you know, a race we haven't talked about yet, the Peter Pan. And, you know, a lot of people might overlook that race, but I think there's a better chance of, you know, a Derby winner coming out of that race than the Haskell, to tell you the truth.
Interesting. Go ahead and talk about Country Grammar and Caracara.
Yeah, I mean, you know, number one, you know, Country Grammar, you know, granted, he had a perfect trip. I mean, he saved ground the whole way. The rail opened up for him. He came through. But you have to like the way he did it. You know, he did it. He was idling, not being asked to run. So he showed me that he has a really high cruising speed. And you got to give him credit for battling back in the stretch like that. It looked like he had a lot more left, and looked like he certainly wants to go on. And he needed that race. And he was coming off a pretty good race as well. Remember, he was coming off that third place finish in that crazy Tap It to Win race. So he looks like he's going to move forward. You know, he's bitonalist. He's got excellent. He's inbred to Pleasant Colony. So he should be able to go on. Caracara was the horse I mentioned to you, you know, before the race, that I've been high on since January. And, you know, I thought it was kind of ambitious. He pops up out of nowhere. I thought I just completely disregarded him as a Derby horse because he just stopped working forever. And then he shows up, you know, on the work tab. And next thing you know, he's in this race, going a mile and an eighth, coming off a six-month layoff. And I thought he ran a phenomenal race, to tell you the truth. I mean, he come over for 6 months later, and listen, they came home in 12-3 in that race, which certainly is legitimate. But you had to expect him to get a little bit tired in the race. So he wound up getting the lead, you know, by the eighth pole. And if you watch the head-on of that race, you know, he gets a little tired, and he starts drifting a little bit, but he doesn't even come close to making contact with Country Grammar. But when he does come in towards him, Irad Ortiz takes Country Grammar, and it looks like he actually brings him out and doesn't bump with Caracara, but shoves him. And that little shove looked like he lost just enough momentum, considering there's a neck difference. Now, I'm not saying he was, you know, which horse was better in race. I personally like Caracara's race better because I knew he was going to get a third ref number. But when you look at the third ref numbers, Country Grammar got a 5, you know, which is okay. He certainly has to improve in his next start. But Caracara got a 3. That's 2 full points faster than the horse that beat him. That's a pretty big gap, you know, for a horse that lost the race. But, you know, he was racing 3-4 wide the whole race. He was very wide down the back stretch, and he makes his big run, and then he got fanned wide at the head of the stretch, gets the lead. Gets a little bit tired at the end, just a little bit, you know, just caused him to drift in a little bit, gets shoved out by the winner. And you look at his pedigree, I mean, he's got a very strong pedigree. I've always liked this horse. I got to give a lot of credit to Gustavo Delgado. I mean, he did a great job getting this horse to run the race he did. But, you know, he's also got a very strong pedigree. He certainly should like the mile and a quarter. So I got to look for him. So both these horses are going to run back into Travers. The good thing about it is that neither one of them have to win. You know, chances are they're not. So if one of these two horses runs second or third, you know, behind Tis the Law, let's say they run 2-3, or if they run, either one of them runs second or third, that's going to set them up for a peak performance, you know, on Derby Day. Because right now, obviously, they don't look ready to beat Tis the Law. But so, I mean, there's three horses right there. And then you throw in Max Player, who looks like, you know, he's ready to move forward off of his race in the Belmont. And he's another horse that he could run second or third in this race. So there are three legitimate horses here that you really don't even have to win. You don't even want to expect them to win. If you want to give the race to Tis the Law, fine. You know, I mean, listen, winning the Travers is still, to me, one of the greatest races you could possibly win. Not that much lower than the Derby. But, you know, Tis the Law is going to go forward, and he's going to have to repeat what he did going a mile and a quarter, which nobody has ever had to do other than, and I'm not even going to say Canyonero, because like I said, Canyonero had several starts between his mile and a quarter races. But no horse has ever won the Derby off of back-to-back mile and a quarter races. But those horses behind him, that are going to need the Travers to move forward. You got three horses that look to be ready to peak on Derby Day, and they all have pedigrees that look like they want to go a mile and a quarter. So, Peter Pan, watch out for that race. That's going to turn out to be a fascinating race. And you know what? I'm not even throwing out Mr. Guide, because Mr. Guide was too far back in that race. There was absolutely no way that horse wants to be running last. So I don't know why he was last. I don't know what horse they or Ortiz was thinking by bringing him back. But this is a horse who wants to be anywhere from 2, 3, 4 lengths off the pace. And he was the horse that was second to Tappet to win in that allowance race. So him finishing third here, I'm not going to dismiss him. That was only his fourth start of his life. And like I said, that race didn't suit him at all. Having to come from what was it, ninth, dead last in that race. So with his pedigree, he's by Ghost Zapper out of an AP Indy mare, a Music Note, who's a grade one winner. I'm not throwing him out. So we could have the first three finishes of the Peter Pan. Watch out for all three of them to run big in the Derby.
Well, I'm not going to argue. I'm excited, actually, getting that mile and a quarter in ahead of time. It's going to be another layer of of mystery
when you handicap, right?
Yeah. Well, Steve. What else you got?
That's it. We run out of things to talk about.
That's all right, because I still got to get Brian Skirka, Tony in, and Rich Eng. So we'll pull up here, and we'll send you out. When are you coming up? We had dinner with Avi and Rhoda the other day, and they said they haven't heard from you.
No. We've been corresponding on email. Right now, it's a possibility we might be coming up. You know, we're thinking the way things are now, there's no reason to have to come up on a weekend.
That's
so
true.
We might come up, the family's coming, actually going to be here in a couple of hours, spending the weekend. Mandy's birthday is Tuesday, so we're going to be celebrating her birthday here. We're going to be going out to pick blueberries and, going out tomorrow and Saturday. So I'm looking forward to, seeing Theo again. And then we're thinking of maybe going up to Saratoga on Tuesday. And going for a few weekdays. We're going to get together with Dean and Patty Reeves, which I'm excited about, two of my favorite people. And I'd like for them to meet Avi and Rhoda. I think they'd get along great. So, I think that's what we're looking at, just going up there for a few days. Joan goes up there, because she likes to go out to eat, go out to eat in fancy restaurants. My big thing is going up there to sleep in a bed. I told her, I said, look, give me my whitefish salad in the morning. I want my whitefish salad, sit out on the porch, still watch the horses train, yeah. and I sleep in a nice big bed.
Nice.
That's all I need. I don't need anything else.
I love it. I love it. Well, we'll see you soon. And they're asking for you already around town. The restaurants are they've broken out all the best vegetarian items waiting for Haskins' arrival.
I'm taking Alvin Rhoda's word, by the way, that that they've been doing a good job of social distancing, because that's, you know, I haven't been out in public, so I'm kind of a little leery about eating. But you know, I know all the eating's outside, but still,
it's not all outside.
Still around people, but you know, what the heck.
All right. Well, get up here, and we will see you. But we will talk next week, and we'll be looking ahead at that point to shared belief, and we'll be that much closer to our other prep weekend, Travers the 8th and the Ellis Park Derby the 9th, and that'll just leave the Pegasus back at Monmouth as the last chance roundup.
Chance. I mean, you know, if you need a couple of extra points.
Yep. Steve, I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week.
All right, Steve. Take care.
Steve Haskin, everybody. Let's take a break. Our last of the morning, second of the morning, and last of. We got Brian Skirka next, Tony Black, Rich Eng in the next 35 minutes. Let's fill it all in. Scratches are out in New York. Pretty clean. The seventh race, that big 13-horse field, as Andy suggested, Gary Gullo did scratch the one, Big Q, with that big bulky field. There's five out of that race, but still leaves a nice group, right? Group of eight. Mind the coin came. A Gullo actually came out of the 10th as well. And then there was an MTO out of the allowance 6th. Two came out of the 2nd, actually. And Belisarius, actually. Kate and Bernie Dalton took Belisarius out of the Smithwick. So field of eight for the grade one in about an hour and 20 minutes. 25 minutes. Back after this, Brian Skirka from Monmouth. I wanted to have Brian tell you about this huge Monmouth contest, which has become an online this year, this summer. And this is one of the biggest, typically every year. TVG and ExpressBet are going to host it for Brian, and he'll tell you about it next. And then Tony, got that awful story out of Shakopee, and Tony with that, and then Rich Eng. We'll get some plays from Rich back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.